Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan, on Cork's Red FM. This week we have part two of our interview with Laura Delaney and Ed Joyce, head coach of the Irish women's cricket team and captain Laura Delaney, where they talk about their batting, their bowling, the competitions that we need to look forward to and everything in between. If we could just focus on you for a second, Ed, and talk about you kind of as a player. Like, you know, I suppose you first kind of came around, was it in 99, and you know, we were playing in Middlesex and you were like 2020 winning captains and different things like that. Like, how, I suppose, how did you kind of get into cricket firstly, and then I suppose to make it to such a big level? Like, what's involved, I suppose, in getting to those kind of high achievements?
Lots in that. How did I get into the game? So same thing as Laura. I think cricket in Ireland, like lots of other sports, is family and club based. You know, so my dad took a very bizarre interest in cricket. I don't really know where that, he's still a bit shady about where that actually comes from, because he grew up in the Liberties in the middle of town here, and football or soccer was his game. You know, so I think he ended up listening to sort of West Indies England games in the 80s, and sort of that was where he sort of got a bit of a passion for it, and then decided, I'm one of nine kids, so he decided all his kids are going to play cricket. So, him and the uncle, we lived out in Bray as well, which is hardly a hotbed of cricket either. So, we just all played and got involved, and then long story short, ended up in Merion, which is probably the closest, we were trying to work out which the closest club to Bray was, you know, so that's an Anglesey Road and Donnybrook there. So we ended up there, and you know, sort of obviously a lot of us in the family sort of played a lot together and stuff like that. So that's how I got into the game. And you know, if you look at sort of honours boards and captaincy boards and stuff like that, and all the clubs, you see the same names. You know, you see Delaney's every, you know, you see Mooney's at North County, and you see Joyce's in Merion, or you know, O'Brien's in Railway Union and stuff like that. So there's a lot of families involved, and that's sort of where the game gets passed on, I guess. Where it's gone in the last few years with a bit more success for both the men and the women's team has been getting better exposure. There's a bit more, you know, stuff in the papers and news about it, and we've had some good successes on TV, so we're more people know that we have a cricket team here, which is something that definitely wasn't the case when I was younger. I guess then when I got to about 18 or 19, first played for Ireland, and then, you know, what happens in county cricket in England is that you have lots of guys trialling constantly in second teams. So a typical second team at a first class professional county would be probably four or five contracted players, and then the rest would be constant trialing. So you might play two games, and then, you know, they would make a decision on you almost, you know. So you might have guys going around different counties trialing all the time. So I just did a bit of trialing for Middlesex and luckily did well in those games, and immediately got a summer contract, which meant I could go to Trinity College here and obviously do my years, and then go and play the whole summer over there for 4 years, which is great, you know. So obviously doing something I loved in the summer, very cool going away and doing that, and obviously earning a few bob as well, and being able to pay for Trinity here as well. So that was a good way of getting into it. Yeah,
it's all nice and handy. But like, even when you won like the 2020 as a captain,
yeah,
like that was obviously a massive achievement for you. Like, kind of the circumstances where you were kind of given the captaincy, kind of not like late on, but you know, kind of late enough, and you just kind of went for it. Like, you know, what was the difference kind of in that team? Like, why did you win kind of 2008 and rather than kind of other years?
Well, clearly the captaincy was, you know, whoever the captain made a massive difference.
I didn't want to say it out loud.
Yeah. I made very emotional speeches before every game. No, I didn't. Laura's laughing because she can't imagine me doing that. Pragmatic would be the way I describe myself.
I was going to ask you, do you get angry?
Yeah. I've got angry, very angry once. We'll get to that in a second. But
you're quite soothing to listen to. Like, I can hear you on cam.
Cam, that's what I try and portray. So 2008, Ed Smith was the captain, so I was the vice captain, and he broke his ankle early on in the tournament. So I tell him that it was obviously down to me winning it, but he had planned it quite well, actually. We made some good signings for that competition that year, and it just worked out. It was one of those things. Middlesex had been pretty useless at T20 up until that year, and then suddenly we went and won it, which is a bit sort of indicative of the format. It can be a bit unpredictable, but we just had the right players at the right time, a good mix of people who could bowl of the death, you know, a few players who just happened to come through that year, including Owen Morgan, actually, that year. So And as I said, the captaincy was brilliant. You know, the decision making by myself was obviously hugely important, and that sort of got us over the line. Yeah, I did actually drop a catch in the final, which nearly lost us the game. So that wasn't wasn't a good moment.
I was curious to ask you because I was reading in your like Sports Chronicle, like your infamous, like I was laughing at the sweep the leg because one, I thought you were like quoting Karate Kid there for like 2 seconds, but you had your all time controversial moment. Your one and only. Describe to us which one was this?
Sorry,
this was the one where you were bowled by Mohammed Abbas.
Mohammed Abbas, where was it?
It was the leg before the wicket.
Oh, the first wicket in the Test match, was it?
Yeah. Up in Malahide.
I'm trying to remember anything about it. Well, it pitched outside leg, so it shouldn't have been out anyway. So if we'd had the decision review system, it wouldn't have been given out. But I'm not still thinking about that. You know, I've got over it at this stage. You know? So the one time I did get angry with the girls was at the qualifier. I'm not going to go into it, but and actually Laura was batting at the time. You haven't even seen me get angry yet. But it was with everyone else. I don't know. I can't even remember what the details were, but I basically lost my cool for about a minute and then I was back. So it was good. I'll get someone else to tell that story.
I can't probably yelling. Like, I was going to say, Laura's looking going, I don't remember.
I wasn't even yelling. It was more sort of, me angry be more like sort of, intimidating is not the wrong word. Sort of, I don't know, just go dark.
I was going to say, in a non-weird way, there's like a Matthew McConaughey dark vibe about you. Like, yeah, very it's very good, yeah. Very smooth, like.
Yeah, film star, I like that.
Laura's no.
Billy is
I was trying to think of a comical Matthew, but I couldn't think of it anyway.
I was going to say, you couldn't even do the all right. Yeah. No. Well, I was actually curious, because you mentioned earlier, you played for Ireland a lot of it, and then you got the opportunity to play for England. Mm-hmm. Was it weird, because your first game actually was against Ireland and against your own brother, wasn't it? Were your parents like one was wearing an English jersey with your name?
No, they were definitely wearing Ireland jerseys. It was very weird and I can't say I enjoyed it particularly, I'll be honest. I did enjoy most of my time playing for England, which didn't last very long, but it was a great experience. I mean, it was an incredible thing to have been able to do. But, you know, because, as I said, even at that stage, Ireland had just played in the 2007 World Cup, or we're just coming up to that. But, you know, the profile of the game here and the idea of Ireland being a test nation, which we are now, is obviously was pie in the sky stuff, really. So, but then, that game, obviously being Irish born and bred, playing against Ireland, I think it was the first ODI we played against. England at the time, and that was in Belfast, and equally weird playing against my little brother who was obviously opening the batting.
Were you not dying to beat him though internally? Good sibling pride there.
Yeah, I was obviously hoping I'd beat him, but I just didn't like that game, and then ended up playing against Ireland again in the World Cup, you know, and it's definitely a different feeling, I have to admit, for me. You know, you ask Owen the same question, not that he ever played against his brother, but you ask Owen the same question, I think he'd give you a completely different answer. But you know, I never felt particularly comfortable playing those games, but then playing other games for England was fine, you know, so it was just a mix. But that was just my experience, might be different for somewhere else.
I was going to say, my favourite story was when you were on like one of the St. Lucia, I think, and you were kind of playing and you decided you wanted to watch one of the Ireland games, and then everyone was kind of gathering around you. Like, were you always keeping an eye on what was going on in Ireland?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, Ireland, that was the Pakistan game. It wasn't on the telly, I think it was on the, I think it might have been on the computer. Just literally watching updates, because I think we just had a team meeting or something, and then it was, you know, Ireland are doing really well against Pakistan. So, but I mean, most of the England lads would have been interested in how Ireland were doing anyway, you know. So, you know, it was a great story. It was a massive story over in the West Indies at the time, you know. I know the Ireland lads certainly enjoyed that trip as well. So they did an amazing effort. But I mean, interestingly, in that when they got through to the Super, was it Super 8s or Super 6s? I can't remember if it was.
I think it was Super 6s.
Super 6s, which was the second round of the tournament. Four or five of the players had to ask their employers for an extra 2 weeks holidays, you know what I mean? And it wasn't guaranteed that they were going to get it either. That was, you know, something that hopefully the women have a problem with that in the future, because it means we're doing pretty well, you know. So but yeah, it was a good old World Cup, that one.
Yes, I was going to say, even Laura, like watching, you were probably like kind of young at the time and you were watching kind of cricket kind of develop. Like, were you taking not inspiration from the men, but were you kind of looking going, geez, it'd be great now if the women's team, like, did you know there was, obviously you kind of were going up underage, but did you know the women's team were you aware of their success, like, or anything kind of around it, or were you kind of thrown into it, like?
No, I was definitely aware of their success, and I think
once I played Irish under 15s, like Kim and Shona and some of the other girls, you just want to push on and get involved as much as you can. And when before I played for Ireland, we had the Ireland A team, and we used to go and play county teams over in the UK. So that went on for a couple of years before some of us made it onto the Irish team. But yeah, I suppose talking about those games that Ed spoke about, I think that was huge for Irish cricket at the time. Everyone got behind the team, and it was a huge event here. So
yeah, no, it was my first sports awards with the Irish Times, and the cricket president was there, and like he was like the proper centre of attention, like he was living it up for a while, like, you know, he was like, yeah,
milk,
picked a good year.
Yeah,
there.
He yeah. was like, yeah, I've arrived, you know, like, you know.
Definitely been some slow years, I think, being president of Cricket Ireland, but that would have been a good one, all right.
I was going to ask you what, like, obviously 2011 you decided to come back. What was your like final decision making? Were you always intending to go back to Ireland, given the ICC would give you the go ahead, or?
No, definitely wasn't always intending to do that. I think a mixture of loads of things, I guess, but I think having played those couple of games against Ireland for England, you know, sort of realised that I wanted to play for Ireland, really. And, you know, obviously qualified for the 2011 World Cup and, you know, wanted to be a part of that as much as anything, you know, and knowing that I've still had a good few years left of playing, I thought I could make a difference coming back and playing. So, you know, I would have known a lot of the players and stuff like that still, and would have been a lot of the same group. So, you know, and I knew the sort of, we were going somewhere then, you know, and I felt like something to be a part of. So that was the main reason, really, feeling like I could probably make a difference to a team that felt like they were getting better, you know. Mm-hmm. Also, they asked. So that was, you know, that was another thing. Yeah,
was it like a long process? Like, did you have to wait for a lot of...
Wasn't a long process in terms of the decision making.
There was no granny rule
quickly.
Necessary.
Was that?
No granny rule.
There was. It was actually, I did have to get dispensation from the ICC because it wasn't a full 4 years. It was supposed to be 4 years since your last game for the other country. So the last game for England had been at the World Cup in 2007, which was in, I'm guessing, maybe April, and then the World Cup in 2011 started in March. So I did have to get but because I had played for Ireland before, I'm Irish, you know, and it made sense to do that, you know. At the same time, there was a guy called Hamish Marshall, who's a New Zealander with an Irish passport, who was trying to do the same thing, and he didn't get the dispensation because he's a New Zealander. So they sort of, now if that went to court, I'm not sure how that would stand up, but I think that was the ICC's rationale, that here's an Irish person trying to go back and play for Ireland, and will hope, you know, potentially make them stronger, more competitive. So
yeah.
I think that was the rationale behind the decision.
Was it kind of in, like, I'm not saying in their best interest, but like, were they seeing it as like, well, we need more strong teams and competitions, like, let them go?
Definitely, yeah. I think that was part of it.
You'd like to think you were that level.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was like adding four or five players to the team, wasn't it, Laura?
No,
I'm obviously joking, but it's you know, I think what they were saying was, you know, we're trying to get rid of, kind of get away from this thing of having players from, you know, lesser cricketing nations having to go somewhere else to play for an international team, which was definitely the case for myself and Owen and Boyd at the same time, and hopefully that, you know, get them back playing for the country they're actually from, you know. So I think there was definitely an element to that.
I was going to say, is there any even like semi-equivalent, like obviously club going over to Australia and things like that, but there's no kind of equivalent in like women's cricket? Like, you'd never, you know, if randomly England decided, oh, we want Laura, like, you wouldn't be like, no, I'm going to stay here.
I personally would play for Ireland, but I could understand if Kim or maybe someone else was in a similar position. You want to be playing in the best tournaments in the world. Unfortunately, we didn't qualify for the World Cup, but I think if you're at a different level and you want to play the best cricket on a consistent basis, well, then I could understand that it's a conversation.
Well, Scotland had a big problem, so they've lost a player to England and a player to New Zealand in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, so that's, they have a similar sort of cricketing culture to we do, you know, in terms of playing numbers and stuff like that, and they've lost their two best players over the last 3 or 4 years, which is obviously devastating to them. You know, I can imagine if we lost, say, Kim and Gabby Lewis or something like that, it would take us a while to get over that, you know. So they're in that situation at the moment, where I think it's Kirsty Gordon plays for England, and I can't remember the girl's name, who plays for New Zealand, Lee Casper. So she's gone off and played. So they've lost their two best spinners there. So that's obviously massively important to them, and something that really shouldn't you know, it's not helping world cricket by, you know, certainly not helping Scottish cricket if they're losing the best players.
Yeah, because I was going to say there's obviously a downside, like the stronger teams will get just much stronger and then the gap will just widen even more. So it's probably a bit more like frustrating, whereas yours was kind of like a reverse. You were, I'm not saying you were trying to make another team stronger, but like there was a bonus to you going over. It wasn't a case of you were going to, you know, just be another fish in the pond, you know what I mean?
Well, over in England.
It, like, as in when you went to England, Ireland?
Yeah, well, from England back to Ireland. Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a history there, I guess, you know, obviously from growing up playing cricket here and having played on underage level and having played for Ireland, it made sense from that point of view. You know, just in terms of myself playing for England, I was then living in England for a long time before playing for England as well. So, you know, there was, you know, I could perfectly have understood, though, if someone else had made the decision to try and still stay in England and play there. And I was still lucky enough to be able to play county cricket and earn a living doing that, you know. So yeah. It might have been a different decision if it had been, you know, you go back to Ireland and, you know, you can't earn a living from it.
Yeah. That's,
you know, if I'm being perfectly honest about it. So, you see, there was a slight case of being able to have my cake and eat it a little bit, you know. So that's a tricky decision for someone else potentially now.
I was going to say, like, is it kind of even listening to like your playing career and different things like that, because you've only retired in 2018, you're in the job 2019. Like, do you feel, and even Laura, like, do you feel that his ideas are like kind of fresh with cricket, like what cricket is kind of like now? Like maybe compared to like other coaches you would have had in the past. I'm not saying anything is like outdated, but like, do you find that like, because he's so fresh off being a player, that there's different stuff that he can relate to that someone else might have?
Yeah, I think like obviously Ed has been a very successful player in his own right, but I do think having had a lot of different coaches over the years, I suppose what makes coaches good coaches is their ability to communicate with each player, and how you communicate with one person is very different to how you communicate to another player. And I think Ed has that down pat. You learn that very quickly with a coach, you know. It's not something that takes 3 or 4 weeks. It's, you know, after a couple of sessions, you know, if you're understanding the way they're speaking to you and if things make sense. And I suppose looking at the makeup of at the team at the moment, the batting is slightly an area that we've kind of, I suppose, needed to develop further. So Ed has slotted in and has done a brilliant job so far, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that.
I was gonna say, like, even for you, like jumping over from men's cricket to women, like you often hear like kind of different coaches from different sports saying that there's a whole different style, like you have to treat them a bit differently. Obviously Isabel like played, so you were a bit aware. Was it different for you kind of coming over off the men's cricket, or are you, do you not treat them any differently, like are you like, this is it, like?
No, well, having not done a huge amount of coaching in the men's game anyway, it's definitely a different game. I think the power element is something that's not necessarily there with a lot of the girls, and you know, you've got to develop the touch game a little bit more, but you're still trying to get sort of boundary hitting as well in. So I'm definitely still learning, you know. I'm still keen that you need to have a base of good technical ability, you know, and you know, that's sort of where I felt I wanted to do stuff during this winter, albeit there's a lot of the girls are away. That's the only bad thing about a lot of the girls being away. I felt like we could have got a lot of sort of basics that I think are important in, you know, into a lot of the girls, and really only been able to do that with Laura and Shauna, and to a lesser extent some of the other girls who were able to come on Fridays and on Sundays. So that's probably the big issue I have with this winter. You know, in terms of the rest of the game, the fielding is vitally important in all cricket, but especially in women's cricket, where if you field well, catch well, and you know, you've got good throwing arms and stuff like that, it makes a massive difference. Because the power isn't the same as in the men's game. You know, if you're ground fielding and your diving stops and stuff like that, and your catching is really, really good, which I think we've made a big move on. We have a guy called Fintan McAllister who was assistant during the qualifiers and done a load of work with the girls in terms of the fielding, you know, did a great job. So I think we've really made a move there, but we've really got to get better at that as well. I'll be honest with you, the bowling side of things isn't my, you know, it wouldn't be my expertise and something I need to do a lot of learning on, and I definitely need help with that. But we do have a full-time bowling coach with Ireland, who I try and tap into. He's more involved with the men's game, and I'm trying to get him involved more with the women and the girls. And we have a good spin bowling coach who's more of a pathway manager, but he comes in and does quite a bit with the spinners. Again, that part of the women's game is vitally important as well, because if you've got good spinners, you've got got a great chance as well. So, you know, there's loads there, but you know, as I said, the biggest thing from my point of view is the talent is definitely there, and the work ethic is certainly there as well. So those two things give you a good chance.
Yeah, I just want to even say, Laura, like, what do you think is like not the missing key, but like, you know, you mentioned the technical stuff, like, you know, batting and fielding and catching and bowling and spin and things like that. Like, what do you think is like the missing key that maybe Ed or someone else could bring?
I think game awareness and game plans. Quite often we have gone into matches, and I suppose part of that comes from understanding and knowing your own game inside out, but we have set unrealistic maybe game plans, or I suppose what we're going to do as a batting unit.
What would be like unrealistic? Like, what's the...
I suppose when we're playing Australia and Pakistan, they may not have been unrealistic, but they definitely weren't as clear as some of the conversations that Ed's had with the batting group since he's come in. And I think that brings a lot more confidence. Obviously, when you go out and play the best teams, you need to know what you're doing. And when you go out there and you're making your decisions out at the wicket, it can be quite challenging because they're bowling different balls every single ball, whereas you go and play against Holland and Scotland and you are pretty much going to face their stock ball on a regular basis. They might have one or two variations. So I think playing against the best teams, you need to have a very clear game plan. And that's not about having four or five different shots at training at the moment. We literally talk about having two or three options and just being able to execute that. So yeah, obviously drawing on his own experience, but also as a coach, understanding the game as well.
Is there, like, you know, you were talking about, like, you face different kind of types of bowling with, like, Australia and the top teams. Is there... like, in a way, do you have to kind of improvise a little bit if the game plan isn't so clear? Like, are you in your head going, okay, just pretend it's not that big of a deal and hit it like the way you would in a normal basis? Like, you know, is there a lot of, like, you have to do it yourself on the pitch in that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even when you're playing in different conditions, playing in the West Indies or playing in India is very different to playing in Dublin. The ball will turn a lot more in certain areas than it will here in Dublin. The ball will also move a lot more and bounce a lot more in the likes of Australia. So yeah, you definitely have to make your own decisions while you're out at the wicket. But I think having a good game plan and knowing where your scoring areas would be or certain shots that you'll go to before you go out there will definitely give you, I suppose, more peace of mind and confidence going out into that situation.
And are, like, are, it is, as a coach, are you one of those people that, like, the game plan is the game, not as in that's it, like, but are you meticulous in that you have every scenario covered, or
is
that impossible?
I'd be the opposite at the moment. I definitely need to get better at planning. I do believe a good team, you know, a good team, the players on it make decisions in the middle. Cricket's it's a tricky one because the two girls batting in the middle, you can't be constantly communicating with them. They have to be able to make the decision, and what Laura is saying there about game awareness is that comes with experience. She obviously said that the batting is somewhere we need to do, but we did lose Isabel and Cecilia, my sisters, and Claire Shillington, the three, you know, probably the three best batters and also the three most senior batters. So you lose a huge amount of knowledge and experience, and in cricket the two players in the middle work as a team almost. They're constantly making a decision about what they're going to do. Are we going to accelerate? Are we going to sort of shut up shop? How are we going to do this? All that kind of stuff. What score are we trying to get? You know, if we're chasing, what do we need off the next over, next over, next over? And I think with lack of experience, and the girls don't necessarily know what to talk about or how to go about that. And it's very, you know, the only way you can get that is by playing, you know, and by playing more games. You can talk about it in practice, and we try and do sort of scenario game awareness stuff in practice, and it does help a little bit, but it's very difficult to get that without actually playing the games. So you know, this is a long process, and I think one of the things with Laura says she's had a lot of coaches, and there's been a lot of changeover in the coaches. And one of the good things about, you know, one of the many good things about Aaron's job was that he was there for 3 or 4 years, which at least there was stability there, you know. And you know, hopefully I can do the same thing, and actually, you know, with the stability, you know, people know what to expect, and you can actually put your stamp on things. Laura can put her stamp on things, and you know, the group can sort of grow up together and play loads of games and actually learn together. So I think that's, you know, as much as for the team, that's for me as well. So that's what we're hoping to get to.
Like, obviously the future is kind of looking a little bit, you know, brighter for Cricket Ireland. Like, you know, you said you were nearly there, you know, for the World Cup, didn't qualify, but next year you have kind of different tournaments. What should we be looking out for, and what are the ones that you would kind of hope to succeed in and kind of showcase how much Cricket Ireland is evolving, I suppose?
I suppose our main focus is the World Cup qualifiers in Sri Lanka in July. And I actually think that will be quite an exciting tournament. A lot of girls are obviously playing in Australia at the moment, and I suppose the back end of their time in Australia will be focused on the 50 over format. I think given the makeup of our team at the moment, I think our style, the 50 over format, will suit our batting style a little bit more and probably work in our own favour. So yeah, I think it's going to be quite a competitive tournament. Obviously any qualifying tournament is going to be quite competitive, but I do think it's one that we can definitely target.
Are you looking forward to it maybe a bit more because you've had more time with them individually, and even as a team? Like, is it easier for, well, not easier, but is it something that you can be like, okay, we can actually do something big here?
Yeah, I did feel like we would qualify for the T20 World Cup. So, you know, but you're right, having a bit more time and getting to know the girls and just getting to know their personalities and what they, you know, what they're all about, I think will help that, you know, having a bit more time to plan. I do agree with Laura that it potentially the 50 over format, which is a much longer game than the T20, obviously is could suit us, you know, all round. Conditions over there are going to be really, you know, incredibly hot and slightly alien to a lot of the girls, especially the young girls who haven't travelled that much. So we've got to try and replicate that somehow in practice and in the games leading up to it. But, you know, I think the biggest thing with those tournaments, whether they're T20 or 50 over qualifying tournaments, is trying to hold your nerve and not get too nervous, you know, because they really, you know, these games mean so much to the girls if they want to win and qualify for the World Cup. But they make a massive difference to the future as well, because you get funding, you get, you know, future fixtures and stuff like that. So, and they all know what sort of rides on the whole thing. So, you know, it's very hard to separate that bit from the game and winning and losing of the game. So, you know, that's part of my job, Laura's job, the senior sort of management group, to try and take the pressure off the girls and try and make sure that, you know, they're just playing the game that's in front of them and making sure we give ourselves the best chance of doing that. And, you know, the more time you have beforehand, the better for that. So hopefully, you know, we qualify for the World Cup and at the very least make sure we're in that 10-team ODI league going forward, which will hopefully give us something, a bedrock to improve over the next few years.
Oh no, it's been good to have you on the podcast and I appreciate you coming in. I know Laura's busy. Laura's got a busy life ahead of her, but thanks very much obviously for coming in and I really appreciate it. And I think I've learned a bit about cricket. I can't wait to go back to the Xbox and try again. But thanks very much.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to the Joanna Ryan podcast. That was our interview with Ed Joyce and Laura Delaney. We'd like to thank them for their time as they're both very busy people and preparing for individual competitions and everything in between. We hope you liked it and tune in next week where we have Jenny Murphy of Irish Rugby. She talks about her career to date, working with Pep Talk and what it's like to be injured and the mental fatigue that entails. Thanks very much for listening. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.